It's Sunday, which means it's time for Viewpoint Presents with Malcolm and Michael Johns. Each week, we bring you the top global and national news stories presented with facts and top-tier analysis, all from a perspective rooted in America's founding principles. Join us in defending our great nation and American liberty. Now, here's Malcolm and Michael with the week's top stories.
I've been thinking in recent days what people around the world are thinking when they look at the shining city on a hill. And supposedly, we are supposed to have this whole democracy thing figured out. And yet, wow, this thing makes the Gore-Bush thing look like nothing, because it really was nothing compared to what we're looking at right now. And I think many of you out there are probably questioning, where are we headed exactly? And a lot of that is the reason is you have a president in the White House now that has great conviction. He has put himself out there in ways that we haven't seen that other elected officials have not. I mean, they say they're going to, but they really don't. This president has put himself out. Many of us know who follow this thing as a political religion as it is. We understand not only what the stakes are, but what has transpired here and what has taken place. It is a mess. I mean, you can't say anything different than that, people. It is a mess. And yet a lot of this information, we say, well, but it's not really being covered in the media properly. And I would say, and so does that surprise you? Why would all of a sudden the media turn around and cover anything the way they should cover it objectively? But yet, you know, when it comes to this whole narrative about the media, and then you see that just yesterday they go ahead and they make the proclamation that Joe Biden will be the 46th president of the United States, while all these uncertainties are in place, all the scandals, all the lawsuits that will have to be played out. And then there is we the people. And where do we sit in all this? And part of the problem I give to you today is that there is a good part, a good chunk of we the people who still have no idea what is really going on here. And that's the biggest danger we have, my fellow Americans. They don't know, because they don't watch these other off channels. They're involved in the mainstream media, the cable media, the social media. They're involved in those things. And everybody, again, as always, is in echo chambers. And so that is part and parcel of the problem, or the challenge we have ahead, is how do we unite the people and how do we get this information out there? It's vitally important here. Welcome to Viewpoint Presents here. This is Malcolm, along with Michael Johns. And we join you here at this pivotal historic moment in time. And, you know, this is a time that we've been talking about for an extended period of time. I mean, Michael, this really isn't a surprise, or shouldn't be anyways, to any of us, because we have been talking about exactly this very moment of time. And I've used words, even up front in the first hour, as a constitutional crisis. Now, why do I say that? And let me ask you that this point of time right now, Michael, do you think that we could potentially be headed toward a constitutional crisis in our nation?
Malcolm, good to be back with you post-election. A constitutional crisis. I don't believe we are in a constitutional crisis yet, present tense. I think all of the remedies do exist within the confines of the Constitution to resolve the issues related to this election and what appear to me to be a very credible, by the way, allegations of fraud and human error. And I think you have to separate those two, you know, because some of these things can be innocuous. Some of them can be, you know, party machines who've been doing this sort of thing for decades. And I will tell you that I'm a little bit interested. The fact that media outlets have called the race for Joe Biden, and that's about as relevant as your next door neighbor calling it for Joe Biden, because we're really 5 weeks away from the election, which will be December 14th. That's when 538 delegates will gather, and the majority, the winner of the majority of those votes, 270, will be the next president of the United States. So I look at the races that are lingering just quickly: Georgia, North Carolina, Arizona, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and, you know, all of which have somewhere, Nevada only is 88% counted, Arizona 90%. You might recall there was 500,000 votes there that were not even considered when major media outlets called it for Biden. And you know, like, take Arizona as a perfect example. I mean, the president's down 20,000 votes roughly there. He's down roughly 20,000 in Wisconsin. And there are major issues as it relates to challenges and, you know, possible recount. And it looks like there will be a recount in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. since it's within the 1% state requirement for a recount. Did not like what Scott Walker, the former governor of Wisconsin, had to say, saying, well, you can do a recount, but you'll just lose. I lost votes when I did mine. Well, that was when he did his. In this case, we have, you know, allegations of ballots arriving, you know, at night from unknown sources that mysteriously, in the case of Michigan and in Wisconsin, went 100% for these are the glitches, right? It just seems like such a benign word, but you have these unexplained leaps in Biden's vote count in these two states, mm-hmm. Where 130 some thousand votes in the case of Michigan just mysteriously pop up, 100% for Biden, 0% for President Trump, and really no explanation or audit that's been performed yet to assess the reason for that. Mm-hmm. So yeah. This election is the calling this election at this moment, just finally, is based on a presumption that these votes as counted are 100% correct.
Yeah.
And I just think that's a premature presumption for media outlet who've largely been cheering for Biden throughout this to make.
Well, they have been totally 100% cheering for Biden, not largely. I mean, it's been 100%. They have hidden, as I said up front in the other program, Michael, the media has hidden every story to protect Joe Biden. And they have also hidden every success story so that they would not get out for President Trump. They have done their damnedest to make sure this moment. And then I have to share with you, yesterday when they all announced it, I went through the whole channel, click right away. And I see on CNN and MSN and some of these other crazy network programs, and they're talking about character and how Joe Biden has such character. And yes. That's the reason he won, because his character was amazing. And he's such a brilliant candidate. This man wasn't available for anybody. Never in the history of our country have we seen a candidate on any level run for any office, let alone the presidency, from the basement of his home without ever answering a question and getting a total pass on everything. What does that tell you, Michael? Come on, what does it tell you?
It tells me that we have an institution, not, you know, cases of bias as we maybe once assumed a few decades ago, where we sort of said the media were largely liberal, yeah. or they were largely predisposed. And in fact, you know, you and I have talked about this, but one of the most shocking revelations is the monolithic thought that has been presented throughout this campaign and even now in the presentation. For instance, you skim through any article of the last few days about the allegations of fraud, and you will always see an adjective preceding fraud: baseless, groundless, unproven. Well, you know, unproven fraud, unproven that there's not fraud, right? I mean, these adjectives really just are utterly disparaging to what appear to be real credible allegations of issues. And let me just say, Nevada, give me a perfect example, where there's been a criminal referral to the Department of Justice with over 3,000, and this is only a few days now after the election, that have already been identified of individuals voting in Clark County who no longer lived in Clark County. 3,062 cases of ballots of individuals who voted because what have we been saying for 15 weeks now? This mail-in process was prone to fraud, right?
That's right.
3,000 cases already identified in a state that will update update soon, but is undeniably very close. I mean, I think it's, you know, is it, you know, so to sort of say that it's baseless allegations of fraud, groundless, unproven, which is what they always associate, particularly when the president makes reference to it. Have they evaluated these 3,062 cases of voter fraud? Have they personally witnessed each individual case?
How would they
case?
Know? That's right.
And have they and after having investigated, have they completely disproven what is now a criminal referral to the Department of Justice?
No, because
and this is what's immensely bothersome to me. And by the way, I think I've handled myself pretty well with these on these issues all week long. Mm-hmm. In addressing the fact that these are not groundless, they are not baseless, and nor are they unprecedented. And it's also immensely convenient because how often, when you look at the, you look throughout this entire fall, what was the one message, Malcolm, that we were continually told by media that there's no real history of fraud, no real reason to be concerned about it, no real cases that have ever proven demonstrating. And I sat here and cited to you an entire election in North Jersey that had to be redone. A you know, councilman that was two, I think, that were one was a candidate, one was an incumbent, who had been, you know, arrested as a result of it.
Yeah.
There's been nothing but incidents of fraud.
Let me make a point with you now, and I think you're onto something right now, Michael, because then you ask yourself, well, why do they object at even looking at these things? Like you say, Michigan, we're talking 138,000 votes, 100% for Biden. He wins that state, Michael, hands down. We're talking Wisconsin, 65,000 votes. He wins that state, hands down, Michael. You understand where we're at, right? I mean, those are 100% for Biden. And then you take a look and you say, what's happening in Nevada, as you say. And so the point is, they're not only not talking about
Malcolm,
it.
Malcolm, hold on. Malcolm, pause one second. We have breaking news on Viewpoint Presents with Malcolm and Michael Johns. Viewpoint Presents with Malcolm and Michael Johns is calling the 2020 race for President Donald J. Trump, who will receive four more years in office. We are announcing that. We are projecting it right now. Malcolm, your reactions. We've called this race.
Well, I think you're spot on, Michael. I think you're spot on. And I think people need to understand, because look at the things we're talking about right now, Michael. I mean, come on.
Trying to put in perspective the fact that we've become accustomed to when you hear that, you know, breaking news sound
well,
on MSNBC or CNN or Fox News, and they announce he's the winner. And now he's being referred to.
So we're saying the same thing.
And he's being referred
to.
And he's being referred to as president-elect. He's not president-elect until December 14th.
So
we got well over half a dozen, and I think the numbers are going to grow of cases that are headed to courts.
But not only are they not investigating it, Michael, but they're not even talking about it. But they were never interested in talking about it.
Well, no, and they're disparaging allegations. Disparaging people who are suggesting
that's
that
right.
It might exist. That's where their guns are fired.
But to the point you said a moment ago, the media, you said back before the election that you were right when you said they kept saying, don't worry, don't look over here. There's nothing going on over here. There's never any problem or fraud in our election. What are you talking about, Trump? Well, you know, that was how they set up. See, the media is very good at setting the table. They've been doing that now with this election, with their pollsters and with the media elite, to say Joe Biden was going to win by a landslide. It was going to be a blue wave that was going to be a tsunami. And it was going to take us all over, knock us on our asses, basically. OK, and this thing, they were going to win it all. They were going to win the Senate. They were going to win overwhelmingly the House and gain more seats, Michael. They didn't do any of those two things. And they were going to win the White House, and they didn't do that either.
Yesterday, the president issued a statement after Fox, CNN, and MSNBC and AP all called the race for Biden, which I think is almost worth reading. He says, we all know why Joe Biden is rushing to falsely pose as the winner and why his media allies are trying so hard to help him. They don't want the truth to be exposed. Now, I'm really dissecting this in a much more careful way than most of the media do. They don't want the truth to be exposed, to me, suggests that the president has information that media either do not have or have and have discarded. The simple fact, he continues, is this election is far from over. Joe Biden has not been certified as the winner of any states, let alone any of the highly contested states head for mandatory recounts or states where our campaign has valid and legitimate legal challenges that could determine the ultimate victor. Mm-hmm. In Pennsylvania, for example, our legal observers were not permitted meaningful access to watch the counting process. Legal votes decide who is president, not the news media. It continues from there. But I thought it was a well-structured statement as it relates not just it's not an overtly partisan one. It's really an objective assessment of where we stand today on this presidential election and what clearly is a very close race.
Yeah. So I think what you're saying with that statement is, and I felt this all along, and I've actually said this and reported on it before, the president knows much more than he has said. He knows much more at this point than he has said. Now, you read your statement as you just read into it, Michael. And then let me read you these two tweets right now that I think speak to this as well. And one's from Donald Trump Jr., and he says this: the total lack of action from virtually all of the 2024 GOP hopefuls is pretty amazing. They have a perfect platform to show that they're willing and able to fight, but they will cower to the media mob instead. Don't worry, real Donald Trump will fight and they can watch as usual. And you say what?
Well, Lindsey Graham put $500,000 into the president's legal fund to challenge these. Good for him for doing that. A good number of other Republicans have emerged to support it, but Donald Trump Jr. is correct. I mean, we shouldn't having to be nudged these people to be stepping up in defense of accurate vote counting and American constitutional democracy. And yet apparently you do, because it's so much easier for everyone to pull the covers over their head and and escape scrutiny or criticism than it is to actually stand up and say, we have an election here that as of today has very, very serious and legitimate basis for criticism.
I appreciate you saying that. And you know, I want to tell you something. You and I think people should know, you never talk smack, whether it's on mic or off mic with me, but you always talk to me. Even when we're talking rivalry, we always talk about things that we could do better as a people and things we could do better as a movement.
Leadership in this movement requires continual self-evaluation. And that would be the case if we were doing okay or even winning. But when you lose whole institutions like this, when you have polling locations in the largest city in Pennsylvania that you just know for a fact for decades have been controlled by the Democrat machine, and we're not really prepared to assess that, or we're having to go to court the next day to get injunctions or to get orders. You have to say, are we, we have to look at ourselves too, I think is the point. It's the easiest thing in the world is to blame the system, to blame those who have a different ideological perspective or have a different party affiliation. You have to look at this and say, in many cases, they went about taking over large segments of American influence sector, not even just politics. Yeah. I mean, look at academia.
Absolutely. All of it.
And they succeeded in all of that.
Absolutely.
It wasn't like we fought and lost. We never even put a fight
that's
up. And that's what Donald Trump Jr. is correctly saying once again here as it relates. Who, by the way, is a fantastic guy and may, I think, have a great political future himself.
But
he's exactly right that the instinct in our party before Trump was to just lay down and not fight. And it never worked. I mean, and a lot of these guys did this thinking that there would be some reciprocity, that they would be nice to us and some things. And they never were. They never are. So we're at a point right now in a race that's going to define undeniably the future of this country, in an election where there's credible allegations of fraud that absolutely, and one state in Wisconsin with 10 electoral college votes, it's headed for a recount. And we need Republicans to stand up and say, let this process play out. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden should not be declaring himself the winner. The media outlets should not be calling this race unless they've individually evaluated all of these cases and discounted them and are prepared to explain hypothetically in right. or for instance in Nevada why 3,000 people not registered in that county who cast ballots in that county why that allegation is inaccurate.
So this moment of time with what you say there, Michael, tells us all that we could not before, we cannot today, and we absolutely cannot tomorrow count on any media, mainstream media, cable media, social media, any of it. I think Americans are going to discover, if they haven't already soon, that we are on our own here. And that's what outlets like what we're doing here at America Out Loud are going to have to do. I want to read you this other tweet now, I promised here. And this is interesting because Eric Trump retweeted this out with a message that was very striking to me. And here's what I want to pose to all of our listeners and to you, Michael. So I ask us all at this point, you know, we have all this damning information that's out. As you say, the media is unwilling to even look at it, let alone cover it, let alone talk about it, let alone anything. But yet they've taken the unprecedented step of making the move that they've moved, that they've taken to crown the number 46 because they think somehow the power is invested in them. The power is invested in we the people, not the media elites or the operative elites. We got to remember that here. So then I question, Michael, what exactly does the president know about a lot of these conversations and scandals that are out there, cyber warfare, electronic surveillance programs being used, things of ballots and absentee stuff, things being stolen, trucks coming in with 100% Biden. I mean, all kinds of funny things, giving out Sharpies at the ballots. I've gotten so many calls in the last 4 days from people that I don't know who these people are. And people have called and said, I need you to talk to this person, Malcolm. And I'm talking to them, they were given a Sharpie marker and they believe their vote was canceled and not accounted for. In fact, I was going to have some of them on the program up front the first hour and we ran short of time because of the breaking news. But let me ask you this, that tweet now, Bill O'Reilly puts a tweet out 2 days ago. And he says, and the only reason I've seen it is because it was retweeted by Eric Trump with another message, because I don't follow Bill O'Reilly. But here's the tweet. It says, President Trump, alleging massive election fraud. So here we go. The vote will be legally challenged all the way up to the Supreme Court. Georgia, Pennsylvania, and Nevada are flashpoints, to say the least. And there are more than that. But here's what's interesting. Eric Trump takes that tweet, Michael. He retweets it with this message. Wait until you see what we are uncovering. That's all it was. Dot, dot, dot. What do you say to that?
Well, I will start with one very credible issue that I think is almost beyond dispute. And that is Dominion voting systems, which is employed in a good number of states. So in the case, it's used in Michigan, where they had the glitch. This is what they called it, a glitch of thousands of ballots. And by the way, do you want to guess which way they went? You know, because you have an error, it could go one way or the other, right?
I could go 100% for Biden.
Isn't it weird that way? I mean, how that it just always seems to happen.
Yeah, it's weird for sure.
I mean, all these errors just always seem to end up benefiting
Amazing.
Them. I mean, we never do. We ever get any that break our way?
No breaks.
So this software, which by the way, this is a company that is based in Toronto, Canada. Which to me, fire alarms go off immediately when I'm seeing electoral voting systems that are owned and operated by companies that aren't US based. That to me is just should be addressed as a side issue. But on top of that, technically, they had a hugely error-ridden day with glitches in Michigan, in Arizona, and importantly in Georgia, where machines stopped working and where votes were altered again. Incredibly in Biden's favor, not in at Trump's expense. So what do we know about these companies? And I also was intrigued into diving into this, that they had blamed the what they call a glitch, which the word just troubles me, as you can tell, in the updating of software the night before the election. Now, can I ask you, who's updating their software the night before the election? And for what purpose? Has there been any scrutiny of that? Is it, are media outside Dominion right now in Toronto demanding answers to that question? No, they're calling the election. These are just utterly discounted. There seems to be almost no real serious interest in diving into these issues. And by the way, it could be beneficial to them. I mean, they could dive into it and explain why they're not issues. Why just it just so happens is this one particular
That's a joke,
company,
isn't it? Isn't that a joke you're saying right now?
Well, no, I mean, like, I think you have three states here, and I think more than that, but three that I can document where their purported glitches added thousands of votes to Joe Biden in key, all just conveniently in key swing states of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Arizona, and Georgia. Now, if I'm like a journalist, I'm inclined to sort of find that to be a mysterious series of events, right? That one company's, not the other company, so the other companies we don't have any problems with, but this one company just happens to be in four states that the president really does need to win to be president, to be reelected, happen to have glitches, and that those glitches don't break in one of a different number of ways. They break all consistently in the direction of Joe Biden. Now, I would want to know the answer as to how that happened.
Yes, and a journalist.
What I am suggesting benignly is maybe there's some happenstance and it's just a complete oddity of unusual circumstances, but, and the wind blew a certain way and that's what had happened.
But you don't want to know that as Joe Biden. You don't want the answer to that as Joe Biden. You're happy to take that, right?
Well, I think, you know, this is a point I've been making all week long. Which I think you'll find credible, is that if you're really interested in a free and fair election that has broad credibility with the American people and you're Joe Biden, you would be supporting all of these lawsuits. You would be angry that poll watchers being denied adequate access from the Trump campaign and from the Republican Party in Philadelphia. You would be denouncing those people that are doing that. Again, on this issue, just like the street riots, we don't hear a peep from this guy because it's self-interest over public interest. And this is what the American people are tired of. This is what they've had enough of. Joe Biden should be out validating these concerns and demanding that they be resolved. And you know what? What an immensely politically sophisticated move that would be for him if he did that. If you know, his popularity would surge 5 or 10 points overnight if he did
that. So here's what I would say.
They can't bring themselves to do that because I think instinctually they know there's fraud involved.
But why would – let me give you something back. You've made several points that are interesting or not. But you say here, let me keep going. Hold on. You say, why wouldn't he do that? Why wouldn't the media do this? I mean, these are sort of hypotheticals over here. But now let me ask you sincerely back, Michael. Do you know why they wouldn't do that?
Why wouldn't the Biden campaign do it?
Why wouldn't the Biden campaign bring up any of this? Why wouldn't the media bring any of this up? Let me pose
that. That's a simple answer. They want this election closed. They want Trump's coffin nailed shut, and they want to get on with transition planning.
All right, now
it's about power and winning.
All right, very good. I don't want to rest my case yet, Your Honor. But let me say this, Michael. All right, fair enough. But take that further now, and so then we say, well, how did all that happen? Was like you just said a moment ago when you were being sarcastic with the wind blowing. Well, let's just say the wind was blowing just that certain way, Michael, everything to the left went just that. Let's just say that just the stars all aligned, Michael, and all the planets aligned, and it was just a perfect day, and the left, he won all the, and Michael, listen to me carefully now, and here's a candidate who has, obviously, we could argue, dementia or onward signs of something, clearly. This is a man who was asked no questions, who ran a campaign from his basement. This is an administration that the entire establishment has been after since the escalator and then some. And then you align all that up, and now you look at it now, and then you see where the media is, and you see where the Biden campaign is, and you see where all this is, and then you question yourself and say, well, could all this be above board and honest? And you would say, what, sir?
I would say that there is instinctually throughout the history of man an inclination to protect and crave power. And at some point in our history, media, which used to be defined as, you know, a standalone institution involved in holding government accountable, became absorbed in one ideology and one party. And to them, they have been out of power the last 4 years, and they see the chances of being in power in 70 some days, which is itself incredible, but that is where we are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I said earlier, but to reiterate, the easiest thing in the world to do is to look at all of them and blame them. The more intriguing question is to say, what did we do about it? So, for instance, when we're using an electoral counting ballot company based in Canada, mm-hmm. why is no one in these particular states looking at this saying, you know what, don't think we should have foreign companies providing machines for the counting of American votes. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm sure there's American companies who can do that, who would not be subject to foreign influence or conflict, mm-hmm. or would be less so.
That's a good question.
Why are these questions? Why are we always looking in the rearview mirror mm-hmm. to resolve these issues that we're confronting? Why are we never looking forward and saying, here are things that we need to resolve if we want to be a credible ideology and a credible political party, and ultimately a successful one that provides solutions for the American people? And now this president, who had a lot of solutions for the next 4 years, may be denied that because none of this work has been done. Incredible disservice. Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, this one is also incredible to me. They had 35,000 votes to count on Wednesday morning, the day after the election, and took the day off.
Right, I've seen that.
Took the day off.
Yeah.
In a tight race, yeah. in a decisive state. Yeah. Now, I'm going to tell you, I'm not saying this to validate it, but I'm going to tell you the thesis that exists among those who have great skepticism about voter integrity, that you never want, when you're engaged in fraudulent voting, to have to go out and get more fraudulent votes than you have to. Right.
Well, that's exactly it.
So hear me out on this, because it's probably not been explained this way. So let's assume that it could be anyone. It could be the Democrat machine. I'm not even alleging this is the Biden campaign. Maybe it is. Maybe it's someone. But and I'm not even saying for a fact this happened. But if you were looking to influence the outcome of the Pennsylvania election, you would want to know how many votes you need. Because if you only need like 50,000 votes, you don't want to have to go out and fraudulently get 250,000 votes. So you allow that time after the election, which by the way, itself to me is absolutely a basis for appeal to the Supreme Court. Another thing the media haven't looked at. You can't have a state arbitrarily extend the voting filing and then have a court sort of say, yeah, this looks like a good idea, well, given the pandemic and whatnot.
Yeah.
No, that is a responsibility that is empowered to the state legislature. They have sole authority on that. A court has no authority on that. And I believe the Supreme Court is going to rule in Trump's favor on that. But I do find this, so it's interesting. Philadelphia, as you may know, Pennsylvania Convention Center, Center City, Philadelphia, huge facility doing all of this, all of the counting, shuts down overnight. So we're waiting on the Pennsylvania outcome on Tuesday night. Okay. And, you know, it's a little after midnight. They decide to shut down for the night. Why? Because people are tired. Like a corner store knows how to manage shifts, right?
Well,
you take a corner store with 10 employees.
Okay.
that's open 24/7. They know, they understand shift work.
Well, the reason all this is happening, and because, Michael, it's by design. It's by design. And so the thing I try to bring back to you is that, yeah, I mean, again, the wind doesn't blow a certain way, and the stars and the planets did not align accordingly, that I believe I would argue back to you, these amount of coincidences don't happen. This is by design. So let's do this before we pause here now. You're listening to Viewpoint Presents with Malcolm and Michael Johns here. And listen, you catch us every week here on America Out Loud Talk Radio, 11 a.m. and an encore at 7. So again, the entire Viewpoint family of shows here, 10 o'clock. Sunday morning, you'll catch us. And everything goes to podcast. That's the cool thing about it, on demand. So if you miss us there by chance, you can catch it on podcast just after 2 p.m. on America Out Loud Network, right at the top there. So listen, a lot more here. We've got those Senate races. Now, remember, having control of the Senate is very key here. In fact, that's what's impacted or has impacted the stock market and a lot of the money people out there. We've got those Senate races. You've got the two Georgia ones now that will go to runoffs. You still got the North Carolina one. They have it targeted at 48-48. They still haven't called other races. We've got that Senate that hangs in the balance, vitally, vitally important with all this happening. And then you get whatever's going to happen here with the Electoral College, with all these lawsuits and scandals to play out. We'll talk a little more about that next year. And again, Michael mentioned earlier, December 14th is the magic day for the Electoral College. A lot more to that story.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
My fellow Americans, you've watched for decades as radical Marxists have systematically taken over some of our nation's most cherished institutions. And like us, we're pretty sure you're not happy about any of it. But this is the America we now find ourselves in. AmericaOutLoud.com is fighting back with one of the fastest growing conservative media networks in the world, featuring some of the nation's most influential experts and commentators. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
People can't forget the Senate. You know, you started seeing the markets over this past week when they seen the media narrative and everybody was starting to accept in the public space our elites, if you will, I call them the elites, the operatives, were seeing where this thing was going. You're seeing the market sort of settle down because they kind of thought it was being projected there would be a Senate would be in control of the Republicans and the left wouldn't have control of all of that, right? I mean, that was the story. But then you've seen a lot of these races, the two in Georgia, fall into the runoffs. The last one with Purdue was quite striking. But then you also have North Carolina. So right now it was 48-48, but I think it's different than that as well. You've got some independents in there. What do you see happening now with the Senate? Because this is going to play into the power struggle that's going to take place here in the weeks and months ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think Tillis up.
Why haven't they called that yet, Michael? Why haven't they called that yet?
Well, he's not even at 50%. He's at 48.7, and
but he's what, about 2 points above, one and a half, two, or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, with 2% remaining. To reiterate on a macro scale, without getting into the individual races, the importance of the Senate is, which you have to be, I think, if you're a Republican, pleasantly surprised with the way many of these races went, which, by the way, also lends credibility to allegations of fraud. I mean, how? And I'm talking about this in a conceptual way, not without the evidence that I think mainstream media are demanding and they want to see, and I think will be provided in these court cases. That's where they're going to find the evidence, not in Trump's tweet, not even necessarily in my commentary right now, but this issue of these Republicans doing so well in these crucial swing states, mm-hmm. and having voters apparently go Biden, like Biden Tillis. I mean, that just seems illogical to me.
That's another very good point you bring up there.
If you're looking for the anecdotal sort of environment that is suggestive of something that's not properly aligned here, it's that these Senate candidates are doing well, and you would expect that would follow on votes for Trump.
Let me add to that now. The House candidates as well. We took
looks like we're going to pick a few up.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, I think, around 10. Some people are saying could be higher. I don't know what the final count is going to be. But what you're talking about right now is also more, again, anecdotal evidence. But it is evidence because you have what's called coattails. And if there's momentum out there for Trump, and God knows we've seen that momentum at all those rallies and all the excitement across our nation, Michael, in the past couple of months, right? I mean, they were tremendous. The love and the support and the outpouring for the president.
That's another important anecdotal component of this. So we are to understand that 70 million Americans went out and voted for this failed 47-year federal politician, 78 years of age, with no clear-cut agenda or accomplishments to his name. 70 million Americans, you know, maybe, I guess, I don't know. And there was no enthusiasm for him. I was at many polling locations on election day and just kind of, I really felt optimistic based on what I was seeing and what I was hearing. It just, it's very amazing. And I don't think there's any enthusiasm for him. If 70 million people did in fact vote for him, that's 70 million people that a large percentage of whom probably supported Trump's policies in some ways, but were somehow turned off by personal demeanor or tweet content or aggressiveness. It would be so saddening to think that someone would cast a vote on that. But we know that there is an electorate out there that is almost less concerned, or not even concerned, about policy, but is concerned about the sort of character that's reflected in the person who's leading the country and their perception of that. So here we have a guy who's got a credible sexual assault.
If that's the case, Trump has a hell of a lot more character than Joe Biden.
There's a lot of themes that didn't get through, and a lot of it you got to say, well, look, it's the media bias. But then, you know, we had sort of an obligation to navigate around that. So here you have a guy who has a credible sexual assault allegation against him. I mean, I watched that 60 Minutes in the U.S. never broadcast it, but 60 Minutes in Australia did. And if you haven't seen that woman who was an aide to Biden in the Senate's explanation of it, I don't put myself in, you know, I believe in, you know, the course of law and not prejudging things. But boy, it looked incredibly authentic. She did not want to dive into the details. And then when she did, it was incredibly graphic. Mm-hmm. To the voter who was concerned about the character, did they watch that interview? Did they have an opportunity to be aware of that allegation? Number two, the issue of as you and I talked about extensively, of the Biden Incorporated, Biden family scandal, of what appeared to be
a
nine-figure sum of money, I think is safe at this point, that it poured in from, you know, so you have this issue where Biden gets assigned to kind of go to Iraq and is charged by Obama with coming up with terms to ensure American military forces there are not prosecuted, leaves Iraq, doesn't accomplish that, but mysteriously his brother ends up on the board of a $1.5 billion housing project in Iraq. With no housing experience.
Exactly.
And the story goes on. You know, he goes to China to talk about the South China Sea. Fails, you know, Biden
but
fails.
But none of that
America,
mattered, Michael. It wasn't reported on. So what difference does it matter? It was, none of it was discussed.
But the money pours into to Hunter Biden running a hedge fund and private equity fund.
Where does all that go with the light of day now? And that's another interesting thing.
Well,
what's going to happen
in
the next couple of months?
Very good question. That is a very good question. And again, one that no one's asking. It's good that you are, because I thought that through. And, you know, you've interviewed Senator Johnson twice now. If Republicans hold the Senate can't criminally charge or convict anyone, but it has the ability to conduct and to continue investigations. So one of the things, if you do have concerns about possible corruption in the Biden family or the fact that he may even be compromised in ability to come to objective judgments in foreign policy as a result of all that money, those investigations, if Republicans hold the Senate, would continue. But if they don't, but if the Republicans lose the Senate, they would lose the ability to have subpoena power and the investigatory ability to subpoena witnesses and documents and all the things that would be associated with continuing that investigation. Again, structurally, another issue that seems a little unusual, right? It seems to feed the partisanship. If there's a legitimate issue involved, you know, a minor party, it seems, should be able to have some ability to investigate, but that is the way it is in the Senate. And then the final important point, which you and I talked about extensively, is if Republicans hold the Senate, two other things don't happen that would be immensely troubling to anyone concerned about our democracy. Number one, the courts don't get packed because a Republican Senate is not going to agree with expanding the courts. And they're going to ensure that people that are nominated to courts have some, you know, semblance of credibility and record for those important slots. And then number two is you don't have elimination of the 60 vote filibuster rule.
The money that will pour into those Senate races will be in the stratosphere in Georgia. The money is going to be incredible. You're never going to see anything like this before in your life. I mean, and I'm sure by chance, I'm sure the media outlets in Georgia are licking their chops right now because they just won the
Atlanta
lottery.
Media market.
They just won the lottery. They won the lottery because they're going to get a ton of cash infusion now coming into with those two Senate races. But it does look still, and they're going to be important, but with North Carolina being added to the mix, the Republicans should be in good shape. But again, it depends how much funny business is done with these races. We really don't know that yet either. I mean, they've stooped to the level to win the White House. Do you think they would stoop to anything less to win the Senate, Michael?
Well, I don't. And you and I, you know, we talked about, and Atlanta, by the way, is a basis also for machine-driven Democrat politics, as is Detroit, as is Philadelphia. They're known for it. And, you know, there's been cases of fraud in all of those cases. I don't know what the media is talking about when they say there's no history of fraud, electoral fraud in this country. There's people in jail for it. I, you know, made this point. I said, look, if you believe that there's no fraud in this country, there's books that have been written about it, and you ought to put the bail up for people that have been arrested, including within the last few months. You know,
their whole narrative was to throw out a narrative, the media, that everything is up and up with the election. And the reason is, Michael, because while they were driving the getaway car and from the bank loaded with the loot, they were in the back. You see, as they were driving away, the criminals and crooks here, as you will, are stealing this election. Listen, there's no doubt in my mind.
This is the only caution I have for people right now, is because I've seen this play out before where we've had a legitimate.
You haven't seen this play out before, brother, ever in your life. What's going to play out next?
I don't know. How closely have you looked at the Nixon JFK race in 1960?
I don't think anything will play out like this.
A lot of credible people believe that the electoral fraud in Illinois robbed Nixon of the presidency. This is not the first election where there's been cases. It is the first cases where I'm looking at, say, a software system and saying, well, gee, I think there's like a legitimate basis for a major. Mm-hmm. And by the way, who's going to conduct these investigations? Which gets to the next issue. Yeah. One of the importance of restoring political neutrality to the FBI was that we rely on that as an institution to do these things. When they have a stake in the outcome of this, as they did, obviously, in perpetuating the Russia investigation lie and the monitoring of a candidate's candidacy, you lose confidence in that. And I think that is another reason I think a lot of us feel so passionately about this president is the aspiration to drain the swamp is a hugely laudable one. And everyone who's been close to it knows, as I know, it is a major, major undertaking.
Well, the other thing about this president,
he has not drained the swamp yet.
This president has been very transparent. I mean, to the fault of his own. I mean, but he has been transparent. He puts it out there for the American people. While that would seem refreshing to some, to other people, they look at that as a liability. But, you know, again, it is what it is. It is who he is. I think the swamp and the establishment, I think President Trump possibly underestimated a little bit. I think he had a lot of people in there, Michael, that were giving him advice that was incorrect advice, that was bad advice. And so I think that was to the demise as well. But I'll tell you what, the next 2 months are going to be a front row seat in American politics you haven't seen before in your life. And there is nothing in your life that will prepare you for what's going to happen next in our nation.
Well, the challenge, Malcolm, is, which I've thought through a lot, not just now, but in my entire career in this area, is the fact that American democracy, you know, has the rule of law and it has its structure and it's a genius structure. It's what we fight to defend ultimately. But it's ultimately comprised of individuals, men and women, who are flawed, right? I mean,
that's right.
No person is perfect. No person is beyond being swayed by sort of, you know. So ultimately, even when you take these cases to, let's just start with the courts, the local courts that are hearing them now. Most of these courts are these are judges that have been elected. They're in some of these cases that were thrown out, partisan Democrat judges. They were elected as Democrats. Yeah. Now we're to understand that they're hearing that case objectively, and they're setting aside the fact that they ran as a partisan Democrat and they're affiliated with the party, and their future and their whole career may be affiliated with that party, and that they're going to rule objectively on it. It's asking a lot, really, isn't it? And that's the dilemma, really, with this entire process. But there is no better process, because ultimately, if the people aren't in charge, then you're putting an elite number of people in charge, and that's when things really get bad, as they have in the totalitarian societies.
I've been thinking about that quite a bit when you say the process, what we call our American democracy. And quite frankly, as we put our laundry out there, Michael, across the world, around the world, can you imagine, as the picture of, we're supposed to be the picture of democracy, our representative republic, the shining city on a hill, the light of the world. And can you imagine the people that are right now laughing at how we have mishandled this entire situation and knowing what's going to happen now in the next couple of months? It's quite a setup, isn't it?
It's a tad bit embarrassing, I have to say. I mean, I've spent a long time, worked for a period of time at a place called the International Republican Institute, where I went around the world and worked with emerging political parties and civil society and democratic institutions, you know, on how to build a democratic political system after the Cold War, when they were aspiring to do that, but they had all this institutional resistance to it. And I went as a legitimate authority on that, on both on the tactics to do it and the foundation of it. And yes, I believe the world has looked on, and the Ayatollah in Iran tweets a couple days ago, "What a spectacle."
What a spectacle.
And
what a mess.
I have to say, you know, I've never brought myself to even agree a little bit with anything this tyrant has had to say. But what a spectacle.
That would be a first, wouldn't it?
Tough to deny, yeah.
Would be a first, yeah. Well, let's take the last couple of minutes we have left, Michael, and talk about now, in our last couple of moments here, what's the best outcomes we would like to see moving forward? Because I will say to you right now, looking at all the evidence and all of the pieces that we've been talking about with the ballots and the machines and the cyber software and the threats, I believe this President Trump won not only the Electoral College, but he won the popular vote. And I absolutely believe that in my heart of hearts. And I wouldn't say that otherwise if I didn't. So I think there is a fight ahead is what's going to happen. I don't think Donald Trump is going to step down easily from this. What is your vision?
Well, he wouldn't.
He shouldn't.
Yeah, and he shouldn't, Malcolm. And by the way, I would be on with you today if this election didn't have what I would appear to be some very legitimate issues, and if it were not as close as it clearly is, I'd be the first to say that he should, you know, acknowledge defeat, wish Joe Biden well, stay active in public life, and move on. I would have no problem saying that because our system of democratic governance requires that of anyone responsible in the system. I'm just not seeing that. I'm seeing half a dozen, seven states that are almost all under 50,000 votes where there's issues of contention, and one of which is already almost mandated to go to a recount. It's in Wisconsin, that's, you know, roughly a 20,000 vote differential. And I think there's enough here to envision a possible scenario through which, through recounts, the judicial motions that he's filing, and maybe more, it might be more aggressive steps of more thorough auditing, which is going to be difficult to accomplish, including, for instance, of this Dominion voting systems, where this does come out. But, you know, whatever the outcome at this point, we're kind of in that position that I described a few weeks ago, where half the country is going to feel alienated, disenfranchised, angry over the outcome. And, you know, I think we all like I want to get to a place where we acknowledge the legitimacy of our government. Everyone does that, whatever side they're on. And Democrats never did that with Trump. And I'm now concerned that you're going to have after four years of them not acknowledging this president, that we're going to inaugurate another president who's going to have huge clouds of doubt hanging over his head.
Well, hopefully we'll never have to acknowledge it because it won't happen is what I will suggest to you there. And I think we are at a pivotal moment in our nation. You know, I've had so many people in my ears in the past days and weeks reminding me that we're coming to this tipping point in our nation, and that if we don't do something about it, we will lose our representative republic for good. Now, I hear those words, and I'm not always again, as you know, and I told you up front in the first hour, I'm not a conspiracy guy. I don't typically follow those lines of thinking. But, you know, when the evidence is overwhelming and the people start to move and you see the good people who are willing to throw their hat on, in the ring and put their reputation on the line, it should say plenty to all of us. And at that point, I think we're coming to that point now in this government and where we're at. I don't think the rules of yesterday are going to be the rules of tomorrow. We're at a very interesting moment. Now, we're going to have that big program on Monday. You definitely want to connect with us on the Voice of a Nation. We're going to dive big time deep into the scandal in the cyber warfare as the General McInerney will be on with me then. And we have a lot more to talk about there. I will be on all week long on the Voice of a Nation, and we'll be all programming, be bringing it to you, and really trying to make sense of what most of us would think and understand. There is no sense. There is absolutely no sense. But there is if you look at the devious plans of the people who are trying to undermine the rule of law and trying to undermine our system of government, as Michael was just stating. So on that point, thank you, my fellow Americans, for being with us on the mission here. It is a mission of a lifetime. And as I started the first hour with you, with these exact words that I say to you every day, and I've said it for years now, and I'm going to end it right here. And if there are ever words that I hope would resonate with you, I hope it's these. It's time to get involved and get loud.